Welcome once again to Word on the Hills with me, Gwen Sheltimer, my co-host Felicity Sidnell-Reed, and our guest this week, author Stephen Skivington. Each week at this time, we visit with a local author, an editor, publisher, or other persons involved with writers and readers. We ask them to introduce us to their work and hope for a glimpse into their lives. We find out what prompts them to write and invite them to read to us from their latest books. And this week, we're very pleased to have Stephen Skivington as our guest. Welcome, Stephen.
Thank you.
Stephen Skivington is one of Canada's preeminent political pundits and healthcare policy experts. His columns regularly appear in newspapers all across Canada under the banner Opinions and Observations. Stephen also appears on News Talk 1010 with Ted Wallachin every Saturday afternoon. Formerly the manager of government relations for the Ontario Medical Association, where he spent 6.5 years lobbying elected officials and civil servants at all 3 levels of government, Stephen is currently the president of Polytrain Inc., a public relations firm he founded in 2001, specializing in leadership development and candidate training, lobbying, and crisis management. In addition to being a full-time registered lobbyist, Stephen, who has been involved in politics since 1988, also has a great deal of experience in community and stakeholder relations, as well as media and government relations. He lives in Cobourg. So, Stephen, before we get to your latest book, tell us a little about yourself. How did you become a lobbyist?
Well, I'm probably an advertisement for not having a plan before you go to university. I was actually an artist. I painted the first mural in a high school gymnasium in Canada back in 1975. Of sport figures. And I actually went to university to learn sort of other things as opposed to learning how to be an artist, because I was already far down that road. And in the case of becoming a lobbyist, I was hired by the Ontario Medical Association. On my fourth day there, everybody was fired or quit. And all of a sudden, I ended up being kind of pushed into the role of government relations guy. So it's like my whole career has been one accident after another. And yeah, I guess I've made the most of it, you could say, but it definitely wasn't a plan.
Well, was it a happy accident?
Well, I think so, yeah, because I've actually enjoyed it immensely. And it's funny, my training as an artist, my training as a writer, painter, photographer, all of that has actually come in very, very handy in the work I do.
I don't know about other people, but I usually think of U.S. politics when I hear about lobbyists rather than Canadian. Are there many lobbyists in Canadian politics?
Oh, there's hundreds, if not thousands. We had, about 20 years ago, they finally came up with a lobby registry federally. I was around in 95, 96 when Ontario copied that. And then cities like Toronto, Ottawa, Hamilton have also created a municipal lobby registry. So, you know, in the case of the SNC-Lavalin affair that's going on right now, there are hundreds and hundreds of lobbyists listed on the federal site who've been lobbying that issue. So, yes, there's many, many more than you might imagine in Canada.
Hmm. Interesting. Now, you're described as a direct lobbyist. So, how is that direct rather than indirect?
Well, there's various levels of lobbyists. For example, you know, a CEO or board members might be kind of one level. Staff, when I was staff at the OMA, was another level. And then there's what kind of consultant lobbyists, which are more, I guess, the direct type lobbyists, where they hire a firm like I run now, my firm Polytrain, to come in and work on a problem and talk to politicians usually, and get a result. Either have a piece of legislation get drafted, or maybe fight a piece of legislation that's not going to be helpful to your client.
Okay, well, with that very clear background for us, tell us now about your new book. And the new book is called This May Hurt a Bit, Reinventing Canada's Healthcare System. Why do we have to change or reinvent our healthcare system?
Well, I've been kind of writing this book in my head since probably 2012, but it was when I dropped dead a few years ago with my heart and riding the ambulance. It's funny, all the times I've driven from Cobourg to Toronto and down the 401, you've never ever had a weirder experience than being in the back of an ambulance, looking out the back door, doing the same trip backwards, basically, looking in the opposite direction that you're used to going. I told myself, if I actually get to the hospital and survive this, I'm going to finally write the book, which is what happened. This is a very different book. It's not sort of the stodgy health policy book that you might be you might be used to, because there certainly are lots of them. I look at myself as sort of every man, the common man. In fact, I say in the book that you don't have to prepare the meal to be able to comment on the merits of the meal. The person consuming the meal is perfectly able to do that job, just like the person who prepared the meal. And so I would suggest people should think of me as like an everyman, as if I'd been dropped into the jungle 25 years ago, like a war correspondent or a canary in the coal mine, and I've now come back all these years later to report on what I found.
Hmm. And so are the changes you propose drastic fixes, or is there small ways that we can fix things?
No, we can't do the small stuff anymore. One of my great concerns is the doctors and nurses have done such a great job of sticking their finger in every hole in the dike to try and keep it from collapsing over the last 20 years. If they'd let it collapse like the rest of us would have, any normal person would have, then the politicians couldn't have got away with saying, well, everything's okay, well, your status quo is fine. If you want to avoid a U.S.-style two-tier healthcare system, we have to make the changes that I'm suggesting, because otherwise you're going to end up with exactly that kind of system. And you know, Dalton McGuinty had the great quote, there'll come a day when we're spending all of our money on the Ministry of Health and we still won't have enough money to spend on the Ministry of Health. And that's the problem. We have a massive accounting problem, and that's what I address in the book.
Hmm. Well, perhaps you could read some of the book to us and perhaps tell us what it is you're going to read about.
Yeah, I'm going to read. The book is kind of, it's a little bit different in that I'm not a journalist. And in fact, people think I'm really cool because I break all the rules. What they don't realize is I don't know what the rules are that I'm breaking. So in the same way that my pieces for the papers have been like little short stories, I've written this like a novel, having read over 5,000 books, most of them novels. And I've always loved the kind of novel where you walk into a bar and you start telling your life story to a stranger. So in this case, instead of walking into a bar, I'm telling this story as we go for a walk through the woods, and I reference that journey several times in the book. And instead of telling my life story, I tell really the story of healthcare, of how we got to be here, and you know what various things have been tried, and the law of unintended consequences, what things have gone wrong. And then the big fix, which is the biggest part of the book, where I come up with 10 solutions and I talk about them. I use Dr. Min Bassiter's simplexity system, in which I talk about how might we, why would we want to, what's stopping us from, for each of those 10, and really do some serious out-of-the-box thinking in what I proposed here.
Okay.
So this part is part one, Back to the Future. And while I was writing this book, I started writing this book on Halloween of 2017. I finished it on April Fool's Day, 2018. I turned 60 on New Year's Eve, and the book came out on Groundhog Day 2019. So a lot of special dates there. But while this was going on, Bernie Sanders, the U.S. Senator, came to Canada around Halloween, and I wrote about that, and it fit right into the book quite nicely. So that's what this part is. Canada as a country has always been somewhat starstruck. Maybe it's because Canadians are, as a whole, so gosh darn polite and humble. Or maybe it's because we have such a massive inferiority complex, we only feel validated if someone bigger and more important than us, say someone with a huge international profile, like U.S. Senator and former presidential candidate Bernie Sanders, decides they need to start paying attention to what we're doing. In the case of Senator Sanders, he made a much ballyhooed trip to Canada in late October of 2017 at the invitation of Dr. Daniel Martin, Vice President of Medical Affairs and Health System Solutions at Women's College Hospital in Toronto, and Kathleen Wynne, Premier of Ontario. Dr. Martin, who became a YouTube sensation in 2014 by taking on a Republican senator during a widely publicized appearance before a partisan U.S. Senate committee looking into the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, aka Obamacare, had recently published a book entitled Better Now, Six Big Ideas to Improve Healthcare for All Canadians, in which she suggested there was nothing seriously wrong with Canada's healthcare system, that a liberal dose of socialism, i.e. boatloads of money taken from the pockets of unsuspecting taxpayers, couldn't fix. Not surprisingly, the good senator, himself a dyed-in-the-wool socialist, was quick to latch on to Dr. Martin's nonsense. Like something out of Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, or perhaps a strange and baffling episode of The Twilight Zone, we were treated to scene after scene of Senator Sanders being taken from one health care center to the next, events all carefully orchestrated so that the beaming senator could witness one miracle after another. I couldn't help thinking how terribly appropriate it was that this truly naive and easily led visitor from the South had chosen to make his pilgrimage to Canada so close to Halloween. It was as if Dr. Martin and Premier Wynne were taking young Bernie door to door, smiling like Cheshire cats as he received treat after treat, which the little boy squirreled away in his satchel so he could take each piece of candy out and savor it once he got back home. Watching all this unfold hour after hour, day after day, thanks in part to our ever-accommodating media, who apparently are incapable of asking probing, tough questions, I began to feel sorry for Sanders. Here was a man who built a reputation as something of a straight shooter, that rare breed of politician who actually cared about the truth, one who said what he meant and meant what he said. Sadly for Senator Sanders, he was being showered with treats by two used car salespersons, who appeared to have no qualms about tricking the senator into believing that Canada has one of the best, if not the best, healthcare systems in the world. Never mind the shortages of doctors, nurses, and pharmacists. Never mind that many of our emergency departments are now operating well above 100% of their capacity, which has resulted in patients being stacked up on gurneys like so many planes on a runway, waiting for takeoff. And for God's sakes, whatever you do, don't you dare mention wait times. After all, being a child of the 60s, Bernie is not a young man anymore. We don't want to give him a heart attack.
Well, thank you, Stephen. We've been speaking with Stephen Skivington about his book, This May Hurt a Bit, Reinventing Canada's Healthcare System. And now we'll take a short break.